On the feature today, an analysis of the makeup of the new federal cabinet.
Jane Philpott, she's the new health minister. On the Liberal website, it says right out front, she is particularly active in her community Mennonite church, where she is a song leader for the congregation. So we know that personally, she's going to be more inclined to the pro-life perspective.
In the news, the city of Toronto could be in legal hot water over its denial of a license for a Christian music festival at a major downtown square. We'll talk to the lawyer handling the case. A resolution in the so-called Costco car crash case in London, Ontario. A resolution that illustrates the inconsistencies in the criminal code when it comes to the rights of the unborn. And an update on the controversy over those Planned Parenthood videos in the States.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The city of Toronto has been served with a legal letter protesting a decision by staff there to deny an event license to a group that has routinely hosted a Christian music festival in a downtown square. The festival, organized by Voices of the Nations, has been held for 5 years at Yonge Dundas Square on the long weekend in August. Last month, organizers put in a routine application for a license for next year's event, and it was denied. The denial letter says the event was disallowed because it violates a policy against proselytizing, because the music mentions the name of Jesus. John Carpe is a lawyer with the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms.
Clearly, their decision to deny this Christian group access to a public square that is used by all kinds of other groups, including religious and political, is a very clear and very blatant violation of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, in particular the freedom of conscience and religion and freedom of expression.
Carpe has sent a letter to Toronto City Hall demanding the license be approved. If that doesn't happen within a few days, he says, he'll see if the organizers want to proceed to court. And he thinks that based on the way the Supreme Court has looked at issues like this in the past, they'd have a pretty good shot at winning.
What we're facing in Canada today is a lot of people believing that, you know, government neutrality on religion means that government should suppress religion and that somehow is neutral. And the Supreme Court's been very clear that that is not neutrality. The City of Toronto and every other government has an obligation to enable and to facilitate the expression of religion in the public square, Yonge Dundas Square being a prime example.
We'll let you know next week how this turned out. Another legal case in the news as well, a final resolution to the so-called Costco car crash case. If you're not familiar with it, here's the basics. A woman in London, Ontario, was involved in a car accident last year. She put her car in reverse, ran into a young family that was just going into a Costco store. One of the children in the family died. The mother was 8 months pregnant. She was injured. Her baby had to be delivered by an emergency C-section and died 6 days later. Initially, the driver was only charged in the death of the older child, but eventually a second charge was laid in the death of the infant. The driver ended up being convicted on both counts. Sentence was handed down last month. Probation, community service, and a 5-year driver's license suspension. ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten's been watching this case. He says the legal intricacies of this show a major inconsistency in our law.
The Canadian Criminal Code says the preborn child is not recognized as anything in law. It does not exist. But if something were to happen to that quote-unquote non-existent thing, such that once that non-existent thing became a human being in the eyes of the Criminal Code, that is, after birth and then subsequently died, then they will recognize that there was something that happened to this non-existent thing, and therefore the law is going to kick in, which is absolute nonsense when you take a step back and just think about how ridiculous that is. But the sad thing is that in the Costco car crash case, had that baby survived but had all kinds of disability, perhaps severely handicapped because of those injuries, the criminal code doesn't say anything about causing serious injury to that child once it becomes a human being in the law and survives. No, only the law will kick in if there's subsequent death, which is a travesty. What would have happened if this child was severely disabled and needed all kinds of help and whatnot? What would happen to the person who caused those injuries? So there, too, there's a discrepancy in Canadian law. All of this tells us that we need laws that protect preborn human beings. We need laws that recognize what every human being recognizes, and that is common sense tells us, medicine tells us, logic tells us, experience tells us that the preborn child is a member of the human family. So our laws should also recognize that.
Interestingly, a similar case down in New York State came up with a different outcome last month. A pregnant woman who'd been drinking and driving recklessly, not wearing a seatbelt, got involved in a crash that killed two people in another car. Her unborn baby was also injured. Again, an emergency C-section, and again, the baby lived less than a week before succumbing to the injuries. In that case, the woman, the mother, was initially convicted of manslaughter in the baby's death. But last month, an appeals court overturned that conviction because the ruling said the child wasn't a person in law at the time of the accident. And finally, the controversy over those Planned Parenthood videos in the States continues. Earlier this fall, the group that was releasing the videos, the Center for Medical Progress, was hit with a court injunction that said it couldn't unveil any more videos that were shot at the National Abortion Federation's annual convention in San Francisco. But then somebody in Washington leaked copies of those videos. Jonathan Van Maren from the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform has been reviewing the hours and hours of leaked video, and he says some of it's even more damning than the earlier material about Planned Parenthood getting paid for fetal tissue. Some of the stuff from the conference, he says, clearly shows how callous those involved in the abortion industry really are.
In there, one abortionist actually jokes about how desperate she was to get rid of these bodies. She rented freezers to store them in, and at one point thought about driving deep into the woods in Michigan and just burning them all on a bonfire. And these jokes are eliciting huge roars of laughter from a room full of abortionists.
But Martin says the real challenge now is how to get that message of those videos out beyond just the pro-life segment of society, because the general public appears to be losing interest in the story. Back with more after this.
ARPA Canada is hiring. We have two openings. The first is for an administrative assistant for the We Need a Law campaign and located in BC's Fraser Valley. The application deadline is November 17th. The second is for a web developer and e-activist who will help manage our websites and IT needs, which we hope to fill for 2016. Both job postings are available at arpacanada.ca.
And we're back on the program. Last Wednesday was a big day in Ottawa.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau, do solemnly and
Justin Trudeau, the son of former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, sworn in as Prime Minister, along with his new cabinet.
So help me God.
Next day, incidentally, the Conservatives picked Rona Ambrose as their new interim leader until a new permanent leader is named. At least as interesting as the swearing-in of the Prime Minister, though, is the appointment of the new cabinet. It's members of this new cabinet that ARPA will be dealing with in its lobbying efforts in Ottawa, and to that end, I've gathered three ARPA staffers in the Ottawa office to talk about the makeup of the cabinet. Policy analyst Colin Postma, legal counsel Andre Schutten, and Mike Schutten from We Need a Law. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks.
So, overall impressions of the new cabinet. Any big surprises for any of you?
It's Mike here. Not necessarily, I don't think, any big surprises. Based on the number of MPs that were elected for the first time, it's pretty obvious that the cabinet also would be made up of many new MPs. In fact, 18 of the 30 cabinet ministers are newly elected MPs, first time in Ottawa serving their constituents and now serving in the executive branch of government. When we look over that list, though, Al, it's good to note that many of them are experienced Canadians. And what I mean by that is these are people who are either doctors or lawyers who have a lot of experience in serving their communities. Just like one example, Patty Haidu from Thunder Bay. She is now the status of woman minister. She has 9 years serving on a drug awareness campaign in Thunder Bay. Right up to the election, she was the head of Shelter House, the largest homeless shelter in Thunder Bay. So I think from our perspective, that's a good thing. These are people with life experience, and I think they'll know what they're doing once they get settled into their new roles.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting, Colin, here. Some of the titles, some of the cabinet ministers was described. Some of them were, in terms of their term, were a little bit overbroad, almost, you could say. In the National Post, Terence Corcoran wrote a couple of comments on it. And he said, the cabinet titles alone reflect vacuous pandering to the false notion that government has the responsibility and the capacity to mold and uplift all sectors of society. One of those in particular was Catherine McKenna. Her title is the Minister of the Environment and Climate Change. And so to some extent, the question is raised, well, how much can a minister of the environment really affect the climate?
Andre, from a legal advocacy perspective, what do we know about the new justice minister?
It's hard to say, Al. We know that she's a prosecutor. prosecutor, which I think is probably a good thing. She'll have a fair view on how to do criminal prosecutions and be experienced. She has a lot of experience in that area. So on criminal justice files, she's probably pretty good. She might be quite open to some of our work on restorative justice issues. For example, we had Dr. Smith give a speech at our last God in Government on restorative justice, and it might be an opportunity to advance some of those principles with her.
Another issue. Prime Minister Trudeau screened his candidates on the choice issue. Nobody was allowed to run for the Liberals unless they were avowedly pro-choice. Mike, what will this do in terms of We Need a Laws efforts? Will it be a little more difficult to deal with this government than it was with the previous one?
Well, it'll certainly be more difficult to work with the government and indeed the cabinet. But we can't forget that the government is not just the Liberal Party. The government is made up of 338 MPs, and many of them are pro-life, and they're willing to put forward legislation that would protect or advance pre-born human rights. So while the Liberal cabinet might not be inclined to vote for any of these issues, it's our hope that when bills and motions come forward, that there will be vigorous debate inside the House of Commons, and that some members of the Liberal Party might be put in a pretty challenging spot as to whether or not they would vote in favor of it. One example I have, Jane Philpott, she's the new health minister. This is, again, her first term in office, so she's one of the 18 new Liberal MPs, a family physician. On the Liberal website, it says right out front, she is particularly active, and I'm quoting here from the Liberal website, she is particularly active in her community Mennonite church where she is a song leader for the congregation. So we know that personally, she's going to be more inclined to the pro-life perspective. She's operating in a party that has said they have no interest in debating this. But we look forward to seeing that healthy and vigorous debate happen inside the House of Commons.
I remember in the last parliament, the whole issue of conscience rights and conscience votes came up. And the Liberals were generally supportive of the notion of free votes on conscience issues. Colin, talk to me a little bit about how that might play out within the context of this new parliament.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the election, Trudeau made his position pretty clear on a number of issues. The Liberals had their platform and they're pretty strong on making, you know, stances on some of these issues. So the real question we would have for Trudeau then is he willing to be open enough to change his position if the people respond in a certain way? One of the comments that was made too during the campaign was the promise that MPs should be able to represent their constituents to Ottawa rather than the other way around. We can only hope that that's something that will be the case in this Liberal government. But his extensive platform, and particularly as Mike mentioned about the abortion issue, if laws did come up that the Canadian people were behind, would he be willing to change his stance on some of these issues to allow for this feedback from the general populace rather than kind of only working on his established platform?
Any other comments, gentlemen, just generally?
Yeah, I could just add to what Colin was saying. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how he responds based on the fact that he is really promoting this new Liberal government as open and transparent. I think it sets a high standard for Mr. Trudeau that we will need to hold him to. So, for example, when he starts to engage his cabinet and the House of Commons on, for example, prostitution, what are we going to do with Bill C-36? I know Andre has mentioned this before. What's going to happen with Bill C-36? If he hears from constituents right across this country, and if based on scientifically based evidence that Bill C-36 is actually good law, will he change his stance then? Obviously, grassroots is a huge part of what we do. So we're going to be engaging our people, and we're going to want to see the government respond.
I'd have one other comment that when you look at the list of portfolios, and this is a criticism of the cabinets of the past 40 to 50 years. Back in the olden days, cabinets were quite small because they dealt with specific things that are within the realm or the sphere of civil government, things like national defense and justice and so on. But if you look at some of the lists, you see ministers for things that really we don't need a government minister for. A minister for family and children, a minister for youth, a minister for sports. And so we see largesse here. Mr. Trudeau's cabinet is smaller than Mr. Harper's. So this is as much a criticism of Mr. Harper's cabinet as it is of Mr. Trudeau's. But we could even combine a lot of these portfolios. For example, we have a minister of international trade, a minister of foreign affairs, a minister of refugees, and a minister of international development. All four of those portfolios could easily be combined into one. So that would be one criticism of how Canada's cabinets have looked for the past few decades now.
All right, guys. On that note, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.